In the wake of the recent Atlanta Regional Neighborhood Summit and the DeKalb County Neighborhood Summit last Saturday, today's program brings together a panel of experienced community organizers and local government leaders to discuss how community and municipal institutions across Metro Atlanta can work together to tackle community issues and invigorate civic engagement. I'm very excited about today's show as we have a very diverse group of panelists weighing in. I want to begin by welcoming back Betty Davis, who I had the pleasure of interviewing just 2 weeks ago on this program. Betty Davis is the director of the DeKalb County Office of Neighborhood Empowerment, also known as One DeKalb. Welcome back, Betty.
Well, I'm so excited to be here.
We also have Karen Rogers, who's the director of the City of Atlanta's Weed and Seed Program.
Glad to have you.
And also in the studio is Ms. Brenda Pace, president of the Eastlake Terrace Neighborhood Association.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And joining us by phone is Nathaniel Smith, Director of Partnerships and Research for Equitable Development at Emory University. Nathaniel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Glad to have you all on the show. Now, since this broadcast is taking place on the heels of the DeKalb County Neighborhood Summit, I'd like to start off our conversation with Betty Davis, the main organizer of that summit. Now, I attended the summit, and I must say that One DeKalb did a fantastic job of pulling off the event. Now, for our listeners who are not yet clued in about what the summit was all about, why don't you share with us what the goals were and who were some of the groups that participated?
Well, we were so excited about this year's summit. In fact, this was the second annual neighborhood summit. The first year we did the neighborhood summit, which is a gathering of all of the neighborhoods, civic association, churches, businesses in DeKalb County. You know, they wanted us to do workshops. And so this year we were able to provide workshops. We provided workshops on going green, how do you create sustainable neighborhoods. We provided workshops on Neighborhood Watch. So it was a great opportunity to not only report out, to look at what were the outcomes from 2009 and what we've done in the last year to create the Office of Neighborhood Empowerment, but also to provide training tools and to continue to engage the citizens.
And the sense that I got while there was that people really did feel listened to. And it's nice to know that within this huge government apparatus that at times seems so distant, so inaccessible to us, that it can actually be responsive to our needs. And people came for so many different reasons. I did a lot of talking and asking questions, let me tell you, when I was there. I spoke to people who wanted to know more about available county services, as you mentioned. People who wanted to know what was going on with school redistricting. I even met a woman who said she just wanted to lay eyes on DeKalb CEO Burrell Ellis to see what he was about. Was he accessible to the public? Did he appear to be genuine and sincere? So in my estimation, the event definitely allowed community members to engage and to tap into something greater than the goings-on in their immediate neighborhood. Now, Ms. Pace, Brenda Pace is also in the studio, and you were in attendance at the summit representing your neighborhood association. What did you get out of the summit?
I think one of the things I did get is that working it, I was able to do something like you did, was to communicate with a lot of the participants. And they were very happy to have that we were having it again, and they were just extremely excited when the workshops were over about all the information and the things that they learned. And I think to be able to take this back to their communities is going to be huge. Through my volunteering in the past year, I've learned to bring my community together.
I think that, you know, what your comment just now has really captured what the mood was at the summit, and I know that everyone who was involved in organizing it has been motivated now to make it even better and better and better each year, so that that learning that you talk about that happened through the trainings and through the networking continues throughout the year. So I couldn't agree with you more, Brenda Pace. We're going to open up the discussion and invite our other panelists to speak in just a moment, but right now we have to take a short break, so stay tuned for what promises to be a lively discussion on community-led partnerships for community-driven change. All right, welcome back to WRFG's special programming event on community-led partnerships for change. I want to revisit the point that was just made before the break about the summit empowering groups by helping them to network and to build skills. And one of the things that I think is common to all of today's panelists is that you share a commitment to community empowerment. But empowerment, of course, is such a multidimensional term. And as I think about it in my own mind, I envisage it in the most basic sense as about having a certain measure of control over decision making about the things that are important to you and that affect your life. But I want to open the discussion up to the rest of the panelists to weigh in about the kinds of capacities and social agency we're really talking about when we speak of community empowerment. And I want to start with Nathaniel Smith, Director of Equitable Partnerships at Emory University. How do you define empowerment in terms of the work that you do?
You know, in terms of this conversation about community empowerment, they are, from my perspective, two critical perspectives associated with it. One is the development of structures that encourage and invite engagement from community participants. A structure that understands the assets that communities bring, and the ability for communities to be a key partner in ensuring that the community, however you define that community, and that jurisdictional government that is involved in creating a better community, can do the people's business by involving the people in making decisions happen. And then the second piece that is critical as well is ensuring that the community is educated in a way that they can actually be involved in the community engagement process in a viable and sustainable and authentic manner. I think that the Office of Neighborhood Empowerment is an incredible and inspiring model for developing those structures, as well as the work of the City of Atlanta through its Office of Weed and Seed.
Thank you for mentioning that, because I definitely want to invite Karen Rogers, the director of the Weed and Seed program, into this conversation. And maybe you can let us know how an empowerment agenda is integrated into what you do at Weed and Seed.
We have focused neighborhoods that we work in. Unfortunately, what qualifies you as a project is an impoverished community. Mm-hmm. And mainly what we see in the neighborhoods that have been selected, they have crime issues and they have economic issues, which leads to a host of other things. We'll work with the communities to determine what your wishes are. What are the things that you would like to see? What type of change would you like to see? What kind of collaborations would you like to see? What type of activities would you like to see? And we actually work with those communities to develop a 5-year strategic plan, which is community-driven. And it's about sharing the power. It's about sharing the power and residents and stakeholders having a voice in the change.
What's interesting here is that we're talking about pooling resources to beef up the efficacy of a community's biggest asset of all, right? Its people. And from there, then it's about neighborhoods also taking responsibility for themselves. Allow me to play devil's advocate for a moment. Oftentimes, as we know, the public discourse in our country around accountability and communities taking responsibility is grounded in assumptions that we live in a meritocracy and in a perfect world of equal opportunity. Now, when there are structural inequalities in terms of access to those resources that you mentioned that can really usher communities toward economic stability and safety and choice that you refer to as being expressions of empowerment, how much empowerment can actually be achieved in a social and political environment that is inequitable? And I want to open that up to anyone who wishes to respond.
I think transparency is critical, and I think we have to be genuine in our relationships. When we talk about civic engagement, you know, to me, we want to engage citizens in a real, genuine way, and that's why, you know, we want them to know that we heard you. It's very important that we stay at the table and that we stay in an ongoing conversation.
Thank you. A lot of strength comes out of that, and you recalling those structures that invite engagement.
Yes.
that Nathaniel Smith was talking about.
I also think that it has to be a healthy balance.
Yes.
and an understanding by the general public that a strong participatory democracy can only be realized through the proper and authentic and real engagement of its citizens. But I think that there are various lessons that we can learn from history. The challenges that we face now are dire, but can we possibly imagine what some of our ancestors had to deal with during the 40s and the 50s after Reconstruction, or during the times of Jim Crow and segregation? They didn't wait on their local government to give them an opportunity to engage and influence public policy. They organized through whether it be their houses of worship or just an insatiable commitment to realizing what Dr. King called the beloved community.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let Brenda Pace jump in there.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. I do also agree with Betty Davis. One of the things I think about often, and even in my own community, when I moved there, it was a beautiful community. And unfortunately, there was a lot of change that took place. And in that, during that time, the community didn't come together and take any self-responsibility. And I think communities and the people, for me, a neighborhood is the buildings, the homes, and so forth. The community is the people. And so my way of thinking is that you have to bring the community together, and somebody needs to let them know or help them realize that they have some responsibilities themselves. Your tax dollars can't do it all.
That's a very good point, and also to refer back to Nathaniel Smith's point that every instance in history where we have seen dramatic systems of oppression that seemed absolutely insurmountable to overcome, social change did in fact occur. And it was through the will and the dedication and the organized power of people who resisted to bring about change in those very structures of oppression.
I also think that when I go to sleep at night, I want to wake up in a safe environment. But when you're in situations where things are really bad, we still have to find ways to connect. You know, if I can't make the meeting, then I'll talk to Ms. Wallace. Can you make the meeting for me? I'll make it this time. You make it next time. Sharing of information. Again, government being accountable, checking out the things that they're basically responsible for. But there are so many things that are community-based that the community is responsible for. I think small victories can lead to bigger things and bigger change within the neighborhood.
I'm really inspired by the energy just here in this conversation. And what you say is absolutely true. And we need to lift up those small victories because they aggregate and become very large victories. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to special programming on the subject of community engagement on WRFG 89.3. Let's shift gears a bit on this program, and I'm addressing this to the listeners. Again, we are trying to focus attention on how everyday people are working to use opportunities at local and state levels to create conditions that benefit everyone.
Everyone.
And especially people in low-income communities and communities of color. I want to engage the panelists to talk through a few issues that many communities in Metro Atlanta may be struggling with and are looking for some solutions to. We know jobs are really at the forefront of how many politicians are setting their policy priorities, but what are some of those other community issues that are generally off the media radar, those issues that come up in small public meetings that you have found neighborhood groups to be really impassioned about and for which they are taking action even without serious support from local government?
One of the things that I think that we need to do as well is current and future change agents is to really think of kind of the holistic implications of neighborhood change. There are various challenges that our communities face, and the challenges that we face in our communities are more like an onion than individual issues. They're layers of the same challenges. And so one of the things that I always attempt to lift up and encourage change agents to do is to really begin to think about how all of the various issues that we will lift up are connected to one another and cannot be solved independently from one another. A strong public safety policy is a strong jobs policy. You know, a strong jobs policy is a strong housing policy. So how can we find ways to really begin to think about a more comprehensive strategy that encourages decision makers as well as change agents to understand how our challenges are connected?
Well, we have to take a quick break. I want to make sure we pick up on this notion of how to approach decision makers and encourage them to think in holistic and comprehensive terms when it seems like the way that we approach public policy issues is through these very siloed approaches. And so it's already set up that way. And so we're talking about a real transformation of the way we do the business of local development. But I want to pick back on that and get comments from the rest of the panelists. Please stay tuned. I want to ask each of you where you think all of these partnership efforts between communities and governments are heading. And in many ways, to pick up on your point, Karen, we know public-private partnerships have become standard practice for governments in many sectors that were formerly considered strictly public obligations. But how are the partnerships with community groups also somehow transforming the mandate and functions of local government? Are governments coming to rely as much on communities for getting things done as communities have traditionally relied on the government for the provisioning of services? Is a new paradigm of joint governance afoot? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think unfortunately for a long time we've had public-private arrangements versus public-private partnership.
Okay, fair enough.
We've had situations where the governmental entities have not done their due diligence in ensuring that the government, that local leaders and individuals were engaged or even understood how they could engage in the process. And at the same time, we've had, unfortunately, individuals who I classify as armchair advocates that don't necessarily get involved and hold their elected officials accountable. And for me, what I'm seeing is this new paradigm afoot where we begin to see great public servants beginning to realize where the true power is, and that is in the people.
Thank you for that comment, Nathaniel. And who wants the final word in the studio?
I think that where we are now locally and nationwide is that we're being tested. Our quality of life. Government has finally realized that they can't do it by themselves. We can't as individuals do it by ourselves. But that at the end of the day, we want to be able to go home, you know, go to sleep, and just like you said, and wake up in the morning and that the kids are okay, that you're okay in your home. So that means that we've got to come together as real partners, as genuine partners, to improve the quality of life in our neighborhoods, thereby improving our city, our county, and our state.
Thank you so much for such a lively conversation, Betty Davis, Karen Rogers.